Greetings, and may the peace of Christ be with you. Welcome to Holy Family Radio. This is Deacon Jim Thorndale, and I'm privileged to be your host today. I warmly invite you to enter into another conversation in living the Catholic life. You know, very seldom in life do we have a chance to witness an individual who's helped change not only our understanding of Catholicism, but also how the process and how we receive it. A simple nun who placed all her trust in God began a journey that would forever change Catholic media. A lady who said, unless you are willing to do the ridiculous, then God will not do the miraculous. And what a ridiculous idea that a woman with no expertise in media, public speaking, or business could raise up an empire that will touch the whole world. Of course, I'm speaking of Mother Angelica, who burst onto the scene in 1998 with EWTN Broadcasting. You know, one of the beautiful benefits that came about because of this, of Mother Angelica's perseverance in doing the will of God, was a beautiful relationship that developed between herself and a man who would write her biography, who forever immortalized this beautiful woman of God. It is with great pleasure today that I welcome that man to this show today, Raymond Arroyo, author. His latest book we're going to talk about, Mother Angelica, Her Grand Silence. He's a producer and lead anchor and the managing editor of EWTN News. He is the host of The World Over Live and has seen in more than 250 million homes internationally each week. I want to welcome back Raymond. Raymond, so nice to have you here.
Oh, Deacon, I'm delighted to be back with you.
What a pleasure. You know, I've had the opportunity to read this beautiful book, and, you know, it brought into context things that I never would have known about Mother Angelica and her constant struggles in this battle, in this life.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, it was really important to me because back in 1999, I promised her that I would tell her whole story. And she said, look, tell the full story of my life, and I don't want you to sugarcoat it. And if you sugarcoat it, I wish you 40 years in purgatory. So just to get out of purgatory and to make sure that, you know, I wasn't going back, I had to tell this whole story. And I thought it really important for people to understand these last years, her last lesson, her last witness. Yeah. And because she was away from the public for 15 years, there was no other way for them to have access to this.
Exactly.
But the truth of the matter is, though she lost her voice in the sense that she couldn't speak with ease at length, she could still communicate a little bit. And during those 15 years, she taught me so much. She taught, I think, her sister so much that I wanted that witness to be captured. And it was important to complete the biography. But more importantly, what I've realized now, and this is one of the nice things about writing and writing books like this that have real spiritual power, I think, I've gotten so many letters over the last few days from people who either they've been diagnosed with a terrible disease or they're caring for an older person, a grandparent or a parent who are coming into their home. And it's helping them understand and put into context pain and suffering, which touches all of our lives. And Mother taught her whole life about, and in these last years, as you know from reading the book, she embodied those lessons.
Yeah.
She, I think, became the living lesson herself. And it's very moving. It's very powerful. And I'm delighted that it's there, it's there for people.
Yeah, first of all, I want to repeat the title again for our listeners. It's Mother Angelica, Her Grand Silence, The Last Years and Living Legacy. And I can tell you, you're going to read things in this book that will just dumbfound you as to the tenacity of this woman. And not only the tenacity, but the faith in God that was always present in every move she made.
Yeah, no, you see that. You really do see it. And, you know, Mother's big teaching, one of the main, I would say, pillars of her spiritual life was living in the present moment and being available to God's will.
Yeah.
Making yourself available to God's will. What is he calling you to do now? And in this book, you see her, this woman of such humor, such will and faith. You see her relinquish that will bit by bit in her body, in her speech, in every possible way.
Yeah.
And it becomes a beautiful oblation, and she discovers on the far side of that suffering the great gift that God has, not only for her, but for millions of people around the world whom you get to take part in and enter into their lives, because I got all these letters over many, many years.
Exactly.
From them. But you also get to see the changes she affects in her community, with her sisters, and of course, perhaps most importantly, in her own soul.
Yeah. But, you know, and you made a good point, and in your book, you say how it affected you about living in the present, living in the now, because, you know, that it's so true. Yesterday is gone, and tomorrow is not here. We have no promise of tomorrow, so we always have to live in the now. And really understand that our life is only about the very present time we're living in right now, and she seemed very intent on that.
Yeah, even when it was painful, even when it was difficult. And that I think is the heart of this book. I think it's the heart of Mother's message.
Yeah.
And, you know, it really is about embracing that will. God knows better than even you do.
Exactly.
I mean, that's really what she's teaching, what she's showing.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make sense to us humanly when you've got this great communicator who suddenly can't talk.
Oh.
Well, you wonder, why would God permit this? Why is this happening? Well, as you read this book, you will encounter, I think, some of the answers. And you see, as Mother herself says, look, I wasn't physically healed, but because of this pain and suffering, I became a spiritual healer to others. And that, you know, sometimes pain is needed to purify and perfect our own souls so we can then go out and reach others. And that's what happens here. I mean, you watch it happening. And I do think that's a piece of the answer that everybody is looking for. And they'll experience it in a very tactical way, particularly people who've known Mother over the years or even have a passing acquaintance with her.
Yeah.
It will, I think, furnish them with a side of this woman, a cloistered nun, Rita Rizzo the nun, that I think they perhaps haven't even contemplated before.
Well, and that the name you gave, Rita Rizzo, most people wouldn't know that was her name to begin with. So even that you're bringing to the forefront of who this woman was to begin with, and that's powerful. But you also made a statement too, Raymond, about this was a strong woman. And I remember in the book about one thing she said is that the Lord has blessed me with strong-willed sisters, but thank God my will is stronger. This is a woman who really led by example.
She did indeed. No, she absolutely did. And you know, her sisters still have that spunk, that I guess you could call it a kind of entrepreneurial, adventurous spirit, where they go out and they're building these new houses, new monasteries all over the place, all over the country, all over the world. And, you know, that just doesn't come from nowhere. I do think they've taken that bit of her and they've continued it. They've kept it alive and extended it. And in many ways, I think the sisters are probably her greatest legacy.
Yes.
And the greatest exemplar of, I think, who she was, who she is, and who she wanted us to be.
Exactly. And Raymond, you know, this book is also not just about Mother Angelica, but this is a relationship, a bond that you had with this woman. And it really shows the depth of character of Mother and you really coming together and forging this beautiful relationship and an understanding that only the truth was going to be presented.
Yeah, well, there was, as you know, Deacon, it wasn't always an easy relationship or a quiet one. When you get two Italians in a room, what are you going to do? But we had a few bumpy moments, particularly early on, which I relate in the book. You know, at one point, Mother used to say, Raymond and I had words once. He didn't get to use any of them.
I remember that.
And, right. Well, here I explain what that referred to, and I'd never talked about it before, and I thought it was important because, you know, people see a nun and they see, you know, a TV host and they say, oh, you know, this must be you know, peaches and sunshine all day long. Well, no, we're real people.
Yeah.
And we had a disagreement, you know, near the top of our relationship, that because of that friction, that difficulty, we discovered, A, how much we cared about each other, and B, that we could really trust one another on the back end of that.
Yeah.
And sometimes those fights are the best way to do that. I think, you know, whether it's a couple or it's a family, this happens. And I wanted to give people an insight into that relationship, and, you know, it was a very deep and important one for me. She changed my life in incredible ways, and I'm still getting letters. In fact, I just moments before I got on the phone with you, I had an email from a lady who said, I just finished the book, and, you know, Mother's the reason I came back to my church. She's the reason that my husband returned to the faith, and when he had a health crisis, she really took us through that. I mean, people have no concept the reach of Mother Angelica and her great spiritual power. And you get to see that up close in this book.
Yeah, I did. And I, as you were relating this, I remember reading it. But I realized one of the things that Mother Angelica gave you was the latitude to say that we can agree to disagree and it won't ruin our friendship. And she was strong-willed enough to believe what she said, and I read some of the encounters we had, but I just want to digress a little bit, Raymond, because I think, you know, we've talked about it before, but, you know, your whole involvement with EWTN was not of your making. I mean, this was not even your radar, according to the book.
Nope.
This is something that you never envisioned. Just kind of describe it to us again, because I think it brings to the forefront the tenacity of Mother and what she saw in you.
Well, you know, I don't know what she saw in me, but I still have my doubts. But she, early on, I was asked by a friend who had a magazine in Washington, D.C., if I would write a piece about this nun in Birmingham, Alabama, who had just started a network. At the time, I had a print background, but I was working in television. And he thought it might be a fun match. So I go down to Birmingham, I meet with her, and it was really like we had never, you know, not known each other. It was an instant connection. She felt like my mother or my grandmother. And we just had this bond. It was instantaneous. And so following the interview, she said, why don't you come down here and start a news operation for us? And I said, well, look, I'm just married. I don't think I can do that. She said, all right, well, think about it. I'll be in touch. So she calls me, she tracks me down, and, you know, she really stayed at it. She called several times. She finally sends a vice president down to make a formal proposal. And, you know, she said, look, come down here. Come visit. Bring your wife. It'll be good for your soul. So whatever she saw, it was, you know, she was pretty determined that I should come down and look.
Let me interject.
So
Raymond, what were you doing at the time when you went there? Who were you with?
I was a Capitol Hill correspondent for the Family Channel at the time.
Okay.
I was also in the midst, unbeknownst to Mother, I was talking to another startup network that was starting up at the time, a cable network, and I was going to be their Capitol Hill correspondent or one of them. Mm. So, it was all, and that's why I wanted to get back to D.C., you know, it was because I knew those opportunities were there. And I was in the middle of those conversations when I left to do this piece. I just went to do a piece for a magazine. I had no intention of doing anything else. And, you know, she kind of sprang the trap and said, would you do this? And I did. And, you know, I started writing about Mother Angelica 20 years ago, and here I am.
It's amazing. It's amazing too, because I know that she had called you on the carpet at one time, and I said I could sense the tension in you two at one point in the book, and yet you seemed to reconcile with that no problem after that was done.
Yeah, no, it was a misunderstanding, but that event is pretty dramatic, and it's there in the book. I don't want to ruin that. I want other people to encounter it for the first time. But we got over that, which was beautiful, and it also gave us a chance, I think, to see the measure of each other.
Yeah.
We figured out what we were dealing with in that moment, and it deepened our relationship. It helped us to bond in a way that I wouldn't have otherwise with her.
Beautiful.
And but for that, she probably would never have granted me the interview she did, which, you know, neither she nor I realized that maybe the most enduring work I've ever done at EWTN is telling her story. That may be it. I mean, I love the interviews. I love the show. You know, there are many memorable interviews in my mind over the years.
Right.
But there's a part of me that thinks maybe one of the reasons I was brought there, maybe the sole reason, was to tell her story and to in a clear way, get teachings and ideas of hers that were trapped in archives or might have been lost to time out. And had I not started that biography when I did in 1999, starting doing those interviews then, it was a 3-year process, we would never have gotten through it because her stroke would have impeded the process.
Exactly.
She couldn't speak after she had a stroke in 2001. So, you know, God has a plan even when we don't. And, you know, Mother used to have a great line. We don't know where we're going, but we're getting there.
One way or another, we're getting there. That's right. And, of course, the old saying, too, is if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans. But, yeah, I'm going to go back to the quote she said also, because I find it intriguing. But when she said that if we aren't willing to do the ridiculous, then God will not do the miraculous. I mean, this woman who had no skills in radio, in any public speaking or any type of media, jumps off the cliff and goes for it. That's amazing.
Yep. Well, that was her way. That was her way. You know, she used to always tell me, when I get an inspiration, I don't test it. I don't question it. I just run at it. And I think if more of us did that, we might accomplish much, much more. You have to just go at these things. And you know, when I was trepidatious about starting her biography many years ago, and I wrote this down, it used to be on my desk for many years, I said, you know, maybe I shouldn't do a full biography. I've never written a book before. Maybe I should just do a memoir with a biographical sketch in it. And she said, well, why would you want to waste your time doing a thing like that? And I said, well, you know, because I don't know. I've never done a full book before. And she said, look, being afraid is not a problem. Doing nothing when you're afraid, that's the problem. Take the first step. The grace comes as you step. You get the grace as you step. So get moving.
Yeah.
And that was kind of, you know, if you could put it in a nutshell, that really is how she operated. She took the first step and the second and the third and the fourth and kept going. Occasionally she would hit a brick wall and she'd stop. She'd drop the project. But more often than not, she kept marching and achieved great things. Not for herself. We have to be very clear. Mother wasn't Ted Turner. She wasn't Brian Lamb. She wasn't doing these things for herself.
Right.
She really was doing this for God and as a service to people. She really believed she could help save souls, reach souls in pain and suffering with this network. And she did.
It's amazing, too, because, you know, I remember in one of the episodes here in your book, you're talking about a recording series when she was doing In His Sandals, and she was doing something with a CBS miniseries called The Word.
Right.
And she kind of puts her foot down there, doesn't she?
Oh, you bet. No, well, this is what I love about her. I mean, there are people who say, oh, she was combustible, she was angry, she was always having fights with people. Here's the reality. At the very beginning, Mother Angelica, she wasn't doing this, as I told you, for herself. She did this, and she operated from principle and deep faith. So she gets to the CBS affiliate, and she's taping this series for CBN. She's broadcast all over the United States. And she's in the middle of the second series, and she finds out about this mini-series that CBS is about to air called The Word. And then she realizes she's in the local CBS affiliate. Now, most of us would go, look, I'm doing good work. We start to rationalize. Look, I'm doing great work here. My second series is in production. I know CBS is doing this thing, but that's in New York. That has nothing to do with the CBS affiliate in Birmingham. I'm just going to shut up and keep doing my good work. This is good what I'm doing. Mother didn't think that way. She saw that this is CBS and a CBS affiliate, and she asked for the general manager.
Let our listeners know, too, what the conflict was.
Right. Well, The Word was a CBS miniseries. It was based on a book written by Irving Wallace. And the upshot of the book is that an ancient scroll is discovered that proves that Jesus and the miracles and the apostles never happened. It was all fiction. It was all make-believe. And Mother was scandalized by this. So she goes to the general manager and says, you can't air this thing. And he says, wait a minute. Do you really think people care what we're doing down here in Birmingham, Alabama? And she said, I care. And you're scandalizing the people. This is blasphemy. And he says, well, look, we're going to air it. There's nothing I can do about it. She said, if you air this thing, I'll never do another program here, and I'll pull my program off of your station, because she was airing locally as well. And he said, lady, you walk out of here and you off television. And she said, I don't need you. I need only God. And she grabbed her set and her Bible and her rocking chair and packed up the Buick and went back to the monastery. That was it. And it shows you, sometimes taking a stand, sometimes standing on principle, sometimes defending the truth is the pathway to what God really intends for you. And what happens in her life is she goes back to the monastery. She tells the nuns, look, I blew it. I got in a fight with this guy over this miniseries, but now I don't have anywhere to shoot the show. We're done. And the nun said, well, Mother, what if we turn the garage? They were building a garage in the backyard. What if we turn that garage into a studio where you can shoot your show? And that becomes the first studio and really the centerpiece of what would in time become the Eternal Word Television Network. And she named it the Eternal Word Television Network as a sly protest against that miniseries, The Word. So it all comes full circle. And, you know, sometimes conflict is necessary. It's exactly. Like the sand that draws out the pearl, you know.
It's amazing. And you know what? That reverberates in my ear then, because she was willing to do the ridiculous. Many people would have thought how ridiculous to leave that show that you're doing for the work of God. And she said, no. It's not of God what they're doing. And God can't be miraculous if I stay here.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No, she was very determined that the last thing she was going to do is allow her spouse to be in any way ridiculed or diminished. And she pushed back.
Yeah.
Pushed back.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing. You know, another thing, Raymond, that I learned throughout this book, and we want to talk more, too, about the internal going on and where Mother Angelica was, because there was some conflicts. You know, you didn't sugarcoat it. There was some conflicts within the monastery there and everything else where she lived, and mm-hmm. She had to overcome a lot during those times. But I never realized the intense pain that this woman was in for so long. And
well, yeah.
In your book,
part of it, Deacon, part of it was psychological pain.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a big part of it. The physical pain, I mean the heavy-duty suffering of physical pain, that didn't come till later. But imagine for a moment, you've got the great voice of Catholicism, okay? The great, I call her at one point in the book, she's Catholicism's greatest pitch woman, you know? She's out there just giving the truth to people just when they need it. And suddenly, she loses her ability to speak.
Yes.
And she tells me at one point, she tells the nuns, when she was still in the bed, you don't know how difficult it is not to be able to communicate.
Yeah.
And she would have these moments of clarity. You know, she'd go weeks without saying anything, and all of a sudden she'd say something like that right off the tip of her tongue. And it was startling. It was almost like God was talking through her. But it was, you know, it gives us an insight, and I think the book gives you some insight.
Yep.
Into the psychological terror and pain that she went through, not being able to be fully engaged in her community, not to be able to go to the chapel every day, not to be able to talk and exercise her will.
Yeah.
This woman of indomitable will. So, you know, I just think there's a rich lesson there for all of us.
There is. In the latter years, at what, 2001 when she had the stroke?
Right, Christmas of 2001, Christmas Eve.
How did you communicate or try to communicate with Mother after that?
Well, she could still talk. She could still talk a little bit.
Okay.
And that went on for, oh my goodness, probably till 2013, 2012.
Okay.
She was still talking in little bits, in hesitant bits and pieces.
Right.
Sometimes it would take her a long time to get things out. Some of those conversations or bits of conversation you'll get throughout the book. I mean, she would talk, she would pray, she would valiantly try to continue communicating. And then after the speech left her entirely, she would use her face, she would laugh, she would roll her eyes, she would punch you, you know, little indicators of, you know, how she felt or what she wanted to communicate at the time. She would nod. But it was difficult. It was much more difficult to access her.
Yeah.
But you'll see in the book, for an invalid, she's amazingly communicative.
Oh, she was. Throughout the book, I mean, just with her eye, with her expression, with her face and with her hands and everything else, she was expressing. Obviously, was she still in some control of what was going on just by her coming in or asking her questions?
Yeah, well, it becomes a spiritual control that
right.
she exercises.
Exactly.
And there's, you know, she talked here about, in old age, we're powerful, she said. And I do
yes.
think there's some of that here. You see why she's so powerful and how others can get there too. And that's a I think there's a real important, it's almost like a manual for encountering pain and suffering, which we all will encounter at some time. And I've just been bowled over by the number of people who've written me and mentioned that, you know, that dimension of the book. I just didn't expect it. I just thought I was telling her last story, what happened, you know, weaving in the last interviews we did. And including some, you know, of her important teachings that I thought shed light on those last years. But the emails I've been getting and the calls have just been amazing. I mean, it really, you know, her message is powerful. She has spiritual power. And I think it's also the fruit of her pain and her, you know, prayer and her intercession now. No doubt about it.
I think what you capture here too, Raymond, is the fact that even in her younger life she struggled, but she always had this trust in God, and she continued on that journey even into her later years. But you, in her book, you talk about this relationship between pain and providence, and you said it could be tracked through Angelica's life. There would be heart attacks, vertebrae crushing bouts of asthma, dire infections, reoccurring back problems, all of which Mother took in stride and used to propel the mission of the moment. She called it a foundation of pain God had laid in her life, and she said that's how God works. She would explain, sometimes it takes more than prayer, it takes great suffering. And that was
exactly
her words.
That sort of captures, I think, the heart of her whole, the trajectory of this life.
Yeah.
You know, pain prepared her. And this is when I always tell people, look, we always want to avoid pain. I don't want pain. You, Deacon, don't want pain in your life.
That's right.
Nobody wants pain in your life. It's not something we invite or look for. However, when it presents itself, when it's there, there might be a spiritual meaning there. There might be a life-altering meaning there. And maybe, in Mother Angelica's life, you see it. You see how the pain redirects her.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm thinking as a young nun, she's in Birmingham, or rather, she's in Canton, Ohio. And while in Canton, her knees are like grapefruit. Okay, they're huge because she's walking up and down the staircases, and she's having difficulty. So they move her. They move her to another monastery. But for that pain, she wouldn't have moved to that other monastery.
Yes.
And the next things that happened wouldn't have been able to happen. So, you know, we have to embrace each present moment, do the right thing in it.
That's right.
And keep moving. That's the story of her life. And, you know, I, when we were last together and we talked about the Will Wilder book, I said, look, stories furnish us really with, they become, if you will, survival guides.
Yes.
They teach us how to survive in the world. And I think Mother's story is the ultimate survival guide.
Yeah, when you talk about that, you know, she really took on the understanding of salvific suffering, from what I can read of it. She really, she could offer that for other people and really understand that in God's providence, there was a reason for it. And she never seemed to question it. She said, you know, the Lord has dealt me, and this is what I'm going to deal with. And she would go on her merry way.
Absolutely. No, that's how she rolled, you know. She was an amazing woman.
Yeah.
And as I said, such faith and such love for people, people she didn't even know.
Yeah.
You know, she would just reach out and embrace them. And you see that, I love that. And again, this is providence, Deacon. I mean, I never imagined that I would be the recipient of all these letters, people saying, look, this is how Mother Angelica transformed my life. This is what she meant to me. But that's what happened. And, you know, I get these emails and letters almost every day. Almost every day.
It's amazing.
And they're heartbreaking and beautiful tales of souls saved, people who find their way after a lifetime of confusion or drugs or you name it. And there's a great gift there. But if it weren't for her suffering, if it weren't for that salvific uniting, her suffering with Jesus's in that bed for 15 years in a corner room in Hansville, Alabama, millions of these people would never have been touched. All these people would have just kept wandering in the darkness. That is the power of one person's prayer, one person's suffering. And guess what? We all have the same power.
Amen. You are listening to Holy Family Radio. This is Deacon Jim Thornton with my guest, Raymond Arroyo. We're talking about his his new book, Mother Angelica, Her Grand Silence, The Last Years and Living Legacy. Let's go back to, I mean, let's start in this year 2001 after she has the stroke. There's a lot going on in the monastery then. And there's, I think there's a power struggle from what I could read.
Well, I would depict it as a family squabble.
Okay.
I think that's what happens. This happens in every family, at least the one I'm in, and many others I know.
Well, I'm Greek. It happens in mine every day.
Go ahead, what?
I said, I'm Greek. It happens in mine every day.
Well, there you go. I mean, it's part of the, I just think it's humanity. And what I love about the book, what I've been getting so many notices on from people is, it helped make the nuns and mother very human. And they said, you know, we often forget, we look at the beautiful habits, we look at these people, and we forget they're human beings.
Yes.
And when they suffer, when they offer things up, when they go through trials, it's as intense and powerful as anything we go through. So, I mean, the beautiful thing is, what I love is, what happened in the monastery was hardly anything scandalous. I mean, it wasn't like Mother was running a casino or something.
Right,
the nuns were
exactly.
Fighting over the, you know, I don't know what, a yacht they had, you know, anchored outside. What happened was a fairly common occurrence. If you're familiar with the founders of any great order, St. Francis, St. Dominic to a lesser degree, Mother Teresa's order, when a great foundress or founder leaves or dies,
yes,
there is always a reevaluation of the charism.
Exactly.
Who are we? What is our mission? And how best to perpetuate it? And here you had two women with one had one vision of it, and the others had another. And they had a tug of war. But they ultimately, the beauty of it is, she told me in 2001, probably in 2000 actually, before her stroke, she said, I've asked the Lord recently to let me stay until the worst is over for my church and for the community. And throughout this story, you see how she mothers these girls, mothers her nuns, till the very end.
Yes.
And there's a happy ending. I don't want to ruin it and tell everybody about it. But, you know, you see some of their struggles, but you also see her beautifully taking them to the far side of their travails and bringing stability to her sisters, who I think are so dear to her.
Exactly.
Even now.
You know, and when I'm reading the book, Raymond, I see these nuns would be in her room almost 24 hours a day, surrounding her, being with her, ministering to her, taking care of her. What a beautiful witness to really caring for another human being. And then also she would be, I would laugh sometimes when she's hearing the conversation. Sometimes she'd just say, enough, I don't want to hear anymore, almost. Like it was getting to be too much for her at times.
Right. No, it was, I think you have to realize when anyone who was in that room with them, the love, the attention that these women gave, you said it, it was a constant giving of self to this woman. And that's a beautiful example, I think, to all of us, too.
Yeah.
And look, the person cared for as well as the caretaker, you get frustrated, emotions run high. It's hard being with another person mm-hmm. in close contact day in and day out. It is hard.
Yes.
But you have to do it. It's what we're called to do.
That's right.
To care for those nearest us. And so I in many ways I think it's you know that's one of the great lessons you see here is that example of her nuns caring for her, and you watch them being transformed by this woman who's an invalid at this point.
Yes.
She can't speak at length, and yet spiritually, physically, and in so many other ways, she changes them for the better. And that experience, if you talk to people who cared for loved ones, even though it was difficult, even though it was painful, Parkinson's and Alzheimer's, these are hard things to grapple with.
Yes, they are.
But what Mother's Journey teaches us is that there are blessings there, not only for the person being cared for, but the person who is caring for that individual.
You know, and I can speak, Raymond, from personal experience. I had my dad live with us for the last 6 or 8 months of his life, and it got difficult. It got difficult. But you know something? I grew into a whole different relationship with my father toward that time, and any problems we had had in the past were really diminished because, you know, you're really looking into the face of Christ. You're looking at as Christ would want us to take care of one another. That's exactly what we have to minister to. And I think this society sometimes is sees the elderly as something we have to put aside rather than care for them and when they most need us.
That's exactly right. And you know, I had a man ask me, Deacon, probably a month before Mother Angelica died. I was giving a speech down in Florida. And at the end of the speech, during the Q&A period, he said, can you tell me what quality of life Mother Angelica has at this point? And boy, he must have seen the flash in my eyes. I said, well, with all due respect, she probably has a higher quality of life right now than you and I put together.
Yeah.
Because I knew the spiritual reverberations, the spiritual ripples flowing from that corner room in Hansville, Alabama.
Yeah.
And if people make full use of the pain, if you sanctify the pain, and she teaches you through her example how to do it, there's great good that can come of this.
Yes.
And we miss the graces. We miss the lesson. We miss the opportunity that God is furnishing by giving us our loved one, even in an impaired state. Love is the most powerful and persuasive and great thing in the whole world. Why
Amen.
Wouldn't you want to give and receive it? And you can only do that by sacrificing.
Exactly.
Love is not about, you know, flowers and going out on hot dates. Love is about sacrifice for the other, for the beloved.
Well, you know, and many times, Raymond, I think our society says quality of life is based on whether you're able to do all these physical activities and whether you can engage in things that you love to do, rather than having the time to fall in love with Jesus and to really have this a deeper and more profound relationship that brings the quality of life here to a climax that is so beautiful. And that's what she was developing. Mm-hmm. She's developing
this
love of the Lord and waiting.
She lived a life in full, a beautiful, full, rich life, and she ended it as only she could have.
Yeah.
And amazing. She's just an amazing person. And to be able to tell that part of her story, it's just, for me, it's such an honor. It's such a gift.
Yeah. You know, one thing I touched on, too, because it was surprising to me in reading the book, the enemy. And it's something I guess a lot of us wouldn't think about, but somebody who is so in love with the Lord, who is so immersed in his love and immersed in his grace all the time, her life is always built on following the Lord Jesus. That's when the enemy wants to attack. That's the people he wants to attack. And she obviously had some spiritual attacks in her life.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people look at that and they go, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. So the devil was attacking Mother Angelica. And the answer would be yes, repeatedly. And when you go back and you look at the life of Mother Teresa, when
yes.
you look at Padre Pio, when you look at the Cure d'Ars, you realize these people were savagely attacked
yeah.
at the end of their life. And the reason is they've lived a life of sanctity. They're looking to heaven, and the devil in the last moments wants to distract them, wants to depress them, wants to pull them away. It's his last chance.
Yeah.
So here you see her in dramatic fashion, supernaturally doing battle with what she called the enemy.
Yeah.
I think, you know, that was, I wrestled about putting some of that in the book, but at the end of the day I thought, you know, it is consistent with her supernatural, I think, sensibility throughout her life.
Right.
And I think the public can learn a lot from it because there's a spiritual truth. And again, I think the whole story needed to be told.
I would
so there
agree.
It is.
I would agree. And you know something else is that the devil wants to scandalize our life. He wants to destroy what image we have we presented to the world. And if he could do that, he's victorious. And yet, Mother stood firm in her faith. She was not going to let the devil have his way.
That's exactly right. No, she battled back, even at the end, even through infirmity. And there again, you see, I mean, there's one scene that a young nun related to me. In fact, I got her to give me her diary, and I reproduced the diary here. And she's absolutely terrified. This young nun is paralyzed. She can't move in the room. She's mother's caretaker, sitting with her for the night. And there's a cold presence in the room. The nun can't move. And it's Mother Angelica. It's the invalid who ends up releasing them both.
Yeah.
Fascinating story. And I think it's a great dramatic and kind of supernatural insight into the power of the disabled,
yep.
the power of the infirm, the power of the free. frail elderly that we want to shove into the hospice care or shove into the euthanasia mill. That is not what we're to do with these people. They are at their most powerful. This is the zenith of their life. We need to accompany them on it.
Yes.
Pope Francis keeps talking about accompaniment. We need to accompany them not only for their good, but for our own.
Absolutely.
And those of our children.
Absolutely, because there's so much healing and there's so much power in accompanying these people from this life into the next, really journeying with them and really seeing their relationship develop with the Lord, and it helps ours to develop also in a deeper way.
Exactly right.
But let me ask you this, Raymond. You've been writing these books. Have you personally experienced Satan trying to distract you from writing these books at times?
That's a good question. Nobody's ever asked me that. Deacon, not only do I experience him trying to distract me when I'm writing them, every one of these books, particularly the Mother Angelica books, has come at what I would call a high spiritual and at times temporal cost.
Yeah.
To me personally, to my family. When the biography came out, the first book in 2005, a week before the book came out, Hurricane Katrina hit. We lost the house. We were homeless. It was really bad, really bad. The second book, my son almost died of asthma. I think it was the third or fourth book, Rebecca, my wife, was diagnosed with thyroid cancer. And I won't go into it, but I've been undergoing my own attacks during the release of this book.
Of course.
So, yes.
Of course.
They are. But, you know, there's a line, and it's so odd because in the book I have a line that I quote from Goethe, where he writes, the great German poet.
Yes.
And he writes, "Where there is great light, there are long shadows."
Yes, I remember reading that.
I think that's true. You can highlight that one because I've lived that one a few times.
You prefaced that in the lead-off in the chapter.
The better the work, the more spiritual power it has, the more uplifting it is, the more engaging, the more inspirational. Anything with a spiritual power, you're going to expect the reaction. You have to expect the reaction. I remember years ago, you know, Mel Gibson, when he was working on The Passion, he had the flu. I was on set, you know, in Rome.
Mm-hmm.
And Mel was, you know, shooting NyQuil, and he's running around with a flu, and he's chain smoking, and he looked terrible. And I said, "Are you all right?" I said, "Is everything?" And at the time, you know, the New York Times was writing things about the movie that hadn't even been released yet, and he was under all kinds of attacks, and he's really sick. And he said, "You know, if the fur's not flying, you're not doing something right." So I have the same sort of reaction at this point. If the fur's not flying, I'm a little worried. So I can rest assured it is flying.
Oh, good. That is wonderful to hear. You know, because I just had the sense reading the book that you're talking about Mother Angelica's, but I had the sense that you could empathize with her because, you know, after I read what you talked about with Katrina and all these different things, I had to believe that there was some type of a satanic attack that would try and take you away from writing these wonderful books about this saintly woman, this woman who has done so much to endure our Catholic faith in all of us.
Well, I'll just put it this way. There have been attacks on every one of them and enormous obstacles to getting them released.
Yeah.
Every one of them. A lot of personal things that I allude to in this book, you know, were really befell me because of the Mother Angelica books.
Yeah.
They draw their share of demons, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because look, I'm telling the story of one of the most powerful spiritual warriors, and certainly the great communicator of the Catholic Church in the 20th and 21st century.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's going to be blowback. I almost expect it. Now I just expect it. I'm like, okay, let's see what he's going to come up with this time. And you have to kind of roll that way and keep moving. You can't let it distract you.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think it was, I believe, the late Cardinal O'Connor who once said that saints are wonderful in heaven, but they're hell on earth. And I think we found Mother Teresa being that the little hell on earth, because she certainly would prick your conscience into really turning to the Lord Jesus. And I remember one of the quotes she said, if you're not a thorn in somebody's side, you're not doing Christianity right.
That's right.
She was a woman who was tenacious in her love of the Lord and the love of the Catholic faith.
And Mother Angelica, you mentioned Mother Teresa.
I'm sorry.
Mother Angelica. Both of them, Mother Teresa and Mother Angelica, they were both tough women.
Yes.
Let me tell you, I knew them both. People think, oh, aren't they sweet? Isn't she a sweet woman? And, oh, she's so funny and sweet. Uh-uh. Mother Angelica was a spiritual warrior. She was tough as nails. Mother Teresa might have been tougher.
Really?
Oh, my gosh. People have this vision of Mother Teresa because they see her with her hands together, and she's diminutive, and she's little. I spent time with her. Let me tell you, as Father Benedict Rochelle used to say, Mother Angelica's tough, but Mother Teresa, she's a bulldozer in a marshmallow forest.
And I can hear Rochelle saying that New York accent of his.
Oh, he was great.
Oh, my.
Great. Another great saintly man.
You know, but again, when I'm reading the book here and all the beautiful captions, I'm going to go back to that incident with Katrina when it came, because you really were planning on staying, but didn't you get a notice to get out?
Well, we decided to evacuate because we had a 9-day-old baby. So, you know, I was just worried about, because when I saw the projections for Katrina, I called Rebecca and said, look, we got to get out of there. I know you don't want to leave. I know you just had the baby. And I mean, you can imagine, she literally had the baby 9 days earlier.
Oh,
but I said, I'm just worried about this thing. We should get out of its way. So we packed up and we went to Birmingham. And we never could go back to that house.
And that was it.
That was it. We had 4 days of clothing, some pictures and videos, the Sinatra CDs, and that was it, and the kids. But you know, that's all that really matters.
Exactly.
I mean, everything else is replaceable.
Everything else is spendable.
And the clothes and the furniture, who cares? I mean, the thing, it taught me a great deal about detachment, what you really need, and preserving the things that matter.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and one of the things that you brought forth in your book, and I think it's very powerful, is you really witnessed a Mother Angelica, and she seemed to have teach you not to live in fear. And I love this quote in your book. You said you asked Mother if she had any personal fears when she started the network, and she replied, "You have to know a lot about something to be scared, and I didn't know anything, so I didn't know what to be scared about." I read that, and it makes me laugh, because, you know, even like a Katrina, you wouldn't know what to be scared about if you haven't lived through it.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Well, why worry? I mean, this is her whole thing is, and let me tell you, people, I always get people, they come to me all the time, say, well, wait a minute, how do you do the television show every week? You're writing children's books, you're writing this biography, you're producing specials, your father, how do you do these things? Well, one of the things that I learned from her is when you're inspired to do something, you go out and do it. You don't worry about it. You can't worry about fear. I mean, I could sit here all day. I could have thought, my gosh, I shouldn't get on the phone with the deacon because I don't know what I'm going to say for this interview. You know, you can talk yourself out of anything.
Exactly.
But what Mother teaches is you go with the things that you're inspired to do. And don't fear them. Just keep trying.
Yeah.
If it's something that's meant for you, doors will open, people will come into your life, the things will happen. Now, that doesn't mean you just sit back and kind of, you know, say a prayer and go away. No. You've got to really dig in and give, sacrifice, take the walk, risk. And I've done that. I've done that my whole life, certainly with her. She's given me an enormous confidence, an enormous sense of mission.
Yeah.
And fearlessness. And that's a great gift.
Exactly. You know, and not to give away a lot more of the book, but there was an interesting discussion in it, because when you said, how do you write these books? How do you manage the channel, EWTN, the news? How do you do this and this and this? And I thought maybe you were going to tell me that you were bi-locating. But
no,
I thought,
I don't think so. No, I got enough. You don't want me to bi-locate. My God, people would be having heart attacks all over the country if I start bi-locating.
You know, there was an interesting part in your book about that.
Yeah, there is. Mother Angelica, there are people who claim that she visited them in different places at different times. I tried to track down some of the people who made those claims. I was unsuccessful in tracking the two major, people who...
And you made that clear in the book, but it was very interesting to think that these people actually seemed to have an encounter with her sitting on the edge of the bed.
Where she appeared at the edge of the bed and told them something, warned them of something. So this was happening, by the way. These letters were coming into the monastery when Mother was still alive.
Wow.
And I confronted her about this. I mean, we talked about this. And I said, these people are suggesting that you appear to them. You're like bilocating. And she said, I don't have any memory of that. She said, maybe it's my guardian angel, but it's not me. But nonetheless, there are numbers of people, including one of her uncles, who claimed that, they had this experience with her.
Yeah, yeah. How powerful. I mean, just by God's providence, these people had obviously some type of spiritual relation with her, which is powerful to understand. And just to know that they were that overwhelmed with Mother Angelica to relay that information to you. But now I want to ask you a personal question here, because I think it's important for our listeners to know how much has, and you've said it before, but when you look back on your journey with Mother Angelica, all these years with her, and I'm not going to ask you what your favorite story is, because you're so many of them, you wouldn't be able to probably relate it. But how has it affected you personally and in your spiritual life?
Well, I'll tell you something. This is interesting that I should have put in the book and forgot to. One day I was running around at EWTN. This is early on, maybe, I don't know, a year into my tenure there, maybe earlier. And she would, the chapel was connected to the monastery as well as, accessed from the public.
Mm-hmm.
And she came in the door of the chapel, and I was in there. This is in the afternoon, maybe 3:30. And she came over and put her hand on my shoulder. She said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm praying. I'm praying." She made a motion like, "Come outside." So I went outside. And she said, "How often are you doing that?" And I said, "Oh, I try to get in here, two times a day, three times a day." She said, "Sweetheart, listen to me. You want to adore the Lord? You want to offer something? You want to pray to Him? Do it at your desk. That's where you could do it best." She said, "I'll take care of the adoration for you. That's what we're here for." And it's an interesting lesson, and it wasn't, okay, you don't have to pray, you're absolved.
Right.
It was your work and what you do at the desk, the duties before you, can be a way of praying to God and giving Him thanks for the things given to you. The exercise of our gifts are an important way, I think, of worshiping God.
Exactly.
And we often forget that. And it was an interesting reminder that she was the contemplative nun. She would take care of the, that was her job. Don't confuse her job with mine. She said, "Your job, you can offer thanksgiving and pray at your desk and spending time with your family."
Well,
and that was an interesting insight to me.
Yeah.
So yeah, that changed my life incredibly.
Beautiful, beautiful. And before I let you go here, we've only got a few minutes left in here, but there's something else that I have to bring up too, because I think it's an important part of this whole life of yours and the experience with Mother Angelica, and it is your better half. I think by the grace of God, she has allowed you to be not only her spouse, but allowed you this freedom to be able to express yourself through EWTN and traveling. And tell us a little bit about her. I'd love to hear that.
Well, my wife Rebecca.
Yeah.
Well, I thank Rebecca in the book, because it's true. Without her, there would be no Mother Angelica story.
Yeah.
There would be no Will Wilder. There would be no television show.
Yeah.
None of it would be possible. Rebecca is kind of she's the unsung hero in all of this,
of
and
course.
Really the dynamo that makes it all happen. Years ago, when I started this journey with Mother and, began interviewing her, I would drive up to the monastery every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock in the morning. So Rebecca was without me, and the children were from 10 to sometimes 7 or 8 o'clock at night. I would do interviews with her on Saturdays. So I was gone during the week, and then they gave up their Saturdays for almost 3 years.
Yeah.
So it was an enormous sacrifice for her. And all of it is. And then there's the writing. You know, writing is difficult, very difficult.
Yes.
You know, it takes a lot of time. And on top of that, perhaps more importantly, if anybody lives with a writer, they know they're awfully cranky people when they're working. Horrible to deal with. You know, I am so cross and just, you know what it is? It's like, it's almost like being pregnant. You know, I've never been pregnant, but I've lived with a pregnant woman. You're uncomfortable. You have this thing you're trying to birth, and you want it to be healthy, and you want to nurture it, but you want to get it moving along.
Exactly.
You know. And that's how you almost live when you're a writer. So Rebecca puts up with a lot, including my snappish moments, and she's just amazing.
Well,
I couldn't do anything without her. And so whatever joy, whatever good, whatever spiritual insights, you know, whatever escape I've been able to bring to people over the years, whether it's a great interview they see or music they've enjoyed or the Will Wilder books or any of the mother stuff, Rebecca is half to thank for all of that.
Yeah, well,
if not all.
I tip my hat to her, and I thank her profusely for allowing us to share in your gifts that the Lord's given you, Raymond, because it's really a joy to have you here and just to hear your experience with Mother Angelica. But, you know, one other thing I want to touch on, too, before we end this is, you know, what would you be telling the world? Because you have the venue to be able to, what would you be telling the world about Mother Angelica and your hope for EWTN that would, and what's going on in the future now?
Well, you know, Mother, I wouldn't tell them anything. I mean, I you know, it's not my job, but Mother Angelica always saw EWTN as a spiritual growth network. That's how she described it early on. That's how she described it to me when we talked later about it. It was to bring spiritual healing, growth, truth to people in their needs. And I think EWTN attempts today to continue that in various ways. Many people doing little bits of what Mother once did. And, you know, we all have our role to play.
Yeah. Exactly.
All of us. You, me, everybody.
And Mother Angelica played it so beautifully. You know, I have to chuckle because, you know, as coming to the end of the book, I somehow have the sense that Mother Angelica made a deal with the Lord Jesus about Easter Sunday. Because, you know, you almost have to wonder, this was God's providence to let her, to be in, to bring her into the kingdom on an Easter Sunday.
Right, absolutely. Look, I mean, I, as I end the book, you know, this is a woman who lived her whole life in the shadow of Good Friday.
Yeah.
And at the end of her life, he allowed her to escape to him on the day of his resurrection, on the glory day. So, yeah, I think that was probably God's little gift to her. I don't know if that's something she would have engineered herself, but I think it was in providence. The way he wanted it.
Well,
and what a day to go.
I would think so, because I think it would be the words would be so beautiful. Well done, my good and faithful servant. And what a better day to speak those words on Resurrection Sunday. And she, by the grace of God, she saw that, she saw our Savior face to face. I remember one time they asked Billy Graham if he was afraid of death. And he says, oh my gosh, he says, I can't wait to see my Savior. And I have the same sense of Mother Angelica. She was.
Oh yeah, absolutely. She was. I think she was very eager to go to him. I mean, many, many, many times she, you know, well, you see it in the book. I don't want to ruin it, but in the book you get a clear indication. I mean, she says her will and what she desires and how quickly she'd like to be with him.
Yeah.
I think it was very important and on the forefront of her mind to the very end.
Yeah, I agree with you, Raymond. And first of all, I want to thank you so much for writing this book, because it really brought to life a lot of the things that we wouldn't have known about Mother Angelica. You not only did you humanize her, but you made her such a lovable woman who really was always thinking of what's best for others and her service to the Lord, never about herself. It was not a self-centered a person who wanted the glory and the fame, but it was always about serving the Lord.
It absolutely was. And she served the Lord and others every moment and every day of her life.
Yeah.
Incredible woman.
A beautiful story. Raymond, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to be on the show here. I mean, I know our listeners would love to hear it. I'm going to encourage them to go out and pick up this book. If you haven't read all of them, you start with the first one, but this is the new one, Mother Angelica, Her Grand Silence, The Last Years, and Living Legacy, written by Raymond Arroyo. And it's beautifully done, and it really is available in all our bookstores here. So if you have the opportunity, go out and get it and read it, and send Raymond a letter or email. Let him know how much you appreciate his writing this book. Raymond, it's been a pleasure having you here on the show here.
Oh, bless you, Deacon. Thank you so much for the time.
You are so welcome, and thanks for taking the time here, and we'll continue to pray for you and your blessings on all your work that you do, and give your best to your bride and your three children, correct?
That's right, three kids,
well,
yeah.
Praise be to God. Praise be to God.
Thank you so much, Deacon.
Thank you, man. Thank you again. God bless.
You have been listening to Living the Catholic Life with your host, Deacon Jim Thorndale, on Holy Family Radio. If you'd like to listen to this program again or share it with a friend, audio copies are available online at holyfamilyradio.net. Thank you for listening.